You can get the latest odds, offers and more great content at williamhill.com, on the William Hill app and in any of our shops around the UK. The NFL Podcast with Gil Alexander and Dave Kellner.
Good to have you with us, folks. Welcome back to the latest edition of the NFL Podcast. Week number 11 coming up in the National Football League. It is Dave Kellner, joined as ever by the mega pod host, the man known for his podcast that can be accessed at Beating the Book. It's Gil Alexander on the line live from Las Vegas right now. First of all, a warm welcome, a good morning to you, Gil. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Dave. Dave, you decided to show up for the podcast this week. Well, thank you. On behalf of everybody, thank you. Though Lee did a fine job last week.
Yeah, he's enjoying the sport with every passing week now, Gil. And I know I was off last week, and it is a disgrace of me just to step back in, Gil. But 2 weeks without chatting to you about NFL would just be too much to bear, Gil.
Even for me, Dave, that would have been too much to bear. I would not have known what to do with myself. Are you okay, though?
I'm very well, yeah. I had some holiday to take last week, Gil, and I was moving house. So there were just a culmination of factors, which meant I couldn't be with you last week. But how did it go anyway, Gil? How were the picks last week?
I can never remember what the pick six is, because I can never remember what the sixth one was. But I know that I was 2-3 on the Super Contest. 2-3 is basically what I have been almost every week this season. This has been a terrible 10-week stretch. The NFL has been really tough for the supposed quote-unquote sharp bettor. You know, I do videos every week with the VP of Race and Sports at MGM International here in the States, who runs all the sports books. And, you know, we make picks every week on that video, as I do with you. And every week he sits there and he tells me, he goes, "Oh man, you're on the sharp side again." And every week he tells me that, Dave. Now I go, oh, no. That is not the side I want to be on. So that's been the kind of year. But, you know, there's a long season in front of us. We'll see if we can't turn it around.
There is indeed. Does that mean that the books out there, Gil, in Las Vegas are losing out because the sharp bettors are losing out? Or is the public making money this year?
Well, I'll tell you, the books had a tremendous week last week. But they haven't had a tremendous week until last week. They did have a very, very good week last week. They got it done with, I think they had a situation last week where both the sharp and public money was on Pittsburgh. Mm-hmm. So they really made out when Dallas covered that game. Pittsburgh 0-4 in two-point conversions in that game. Pittsburgh just decided to go for two every time, failed to make one. And then it looked like they weren't going to cover because of that. But then Ezekiel Elliott broke free at the end. Those two-point conversions wouldn't have mattered in the end anyway. Dallas won it outright. But that was a big decision for them last week. But typically this year, they've had modest wins. That's been the story with books. Don't cry for the books. They've still ended up making money despite all that.
We start with the Dallas Cowboys this week as well, Gil. We've got the Baltimore Ravens at the Cowboys as the our first game up televised here in the UK, and it's a 6 p.m. start time. The Ravens are 11-4 on the money line. The Cowboys are 2-7, and this spread sits at 7 currently. The Ravens plus 7 even money, the Cowboys minus 7 at 5-6, and the total points line is set at 45. The under is 10-11, and the over is 10-11. 5-4 the Ravens currently. And they travel to Dallas to take on the 8-1 Cowboys, who are flying, Gil, with their two rookies, Dak Prescott and Ezekiel Elliott, doing the damage. That pair turned it on against the Steelers as well last weekend, Gil, in that shootout. And during the week, the Cowboys publicly announced that Prescott would be the starter and Tony Romo his backup. A lot of people, Gil, thought it was noble that Romo stood in front of the press and the cameras and supported Prescott. But it was sad to me, Gil. It was as if a man was doing his own eulogy. That's what it was like, Gil.
It was the strangest thing. I don't want to say I've ever seen, because that makes it sound crazy. But It was very odd. I'm with you. Sad, yes. I thought odd. Because one, you know, Dave, when someone takes over your podcast for you after you do this podcast for 10, 15 years, like Romo's been quarterback of the Cowboys, it would be very odd for you to stand there and give an emotional press conference about it. I'm not sure it was required, first of all. Like, I'm not sure why he felt the need to do a press conference. That's the first thing. Second thing was there was something about the fact that it was scripted, right? He had written this down and he was looking at the notes. So it was not really, it didn't come across as this genuinely heartfelt thing so much as it did this, there's a gun off camera that we can't see being pointed at his head delivery of this. So it was very odd for me. I just thought, I was like, well, why is this happening? Like, was this really necessary? And so, yeah, it was kind of strange where he did read his own eulogy. You know, my hunch is it's the NFL. We're probably going to see Tony Romo at some point, whether it's by injury to Dak or poor play by Dak. I mean, we haven't seen the last of Tony Romo, certainly not, and even if not in a Cowboys uniform, certainly not in this league. I suspect we'll see him somewhere, though I will say if I were his wife or child, I have no idea why he wants to keep playing. You know, he's had injuries to his vertebrae, for God's sakes.
Do you think it was the right or wrong decision, or did it turn out to be the only decision the Cowboys could make as a franchise?
I think the latter. I think it's the only decision they could have made. I mean, we debated it here by meaning just football fans. You know, for I'd say about 3 solid weeks, we're like, oh, what are they going to do? And there's some Dak people and there were some Romo people. The Dak people saying you can't go away from the hot hand. The Romo people saying, are you kidding me? It's a small sample size, only 5 games or 4 games or whatever it was at the time that we're having this debate. And that debate really just kind of fizzled away because week after week, Dak just kept getting it done. And now if you pulled him, it would really be ridiculous.
And these two rookies have been sensational. Dak Prescott has 2,339 passing yards. Ezekiel Elliott, over 1,000 rushing yards now. They became the second rookie quarterback and rookie running back teammates with at least 2,000 passing yards and 1,000 rushing yards in a season since Robert Griffin III and Alfred Morris.
Oh, yeah.
Back in Washington in 2012. You'll remember that, Gil.
Oh, we remember it well, Dave. Wait, hold on. Give me a moment. Oh, that felt great. Yeah, no, that was a spectacular year for all Redskin fans. You know, though, you're right. Everything you say about Dak, everything you say about Ezekiel Elliott, you and I could have run through that hole to win that game or to seal that win for the Cowboys last week against the Steelers. And what I mean to say by that is Dak was an amazing pick. Dak Prescott, 4th-round pick for the Cowboys, really has exceeded all expectations. Ezekiel Elliott, people were saying it was a luxury pick at number 4, that the Cowboys might have addressed another need, and he's turned out to be wonderful. But it is that offensive line. I think that's really the point that needs to be made about this team. Move in Cowboys history actually occurred before they drafted these guys, which was a non-pick. When Johnny Manziel of Texas A&M University was available, Johnny Manziel was the guy in college football, but he was clearly, you know, physically had question marks about whether he could translate his game to the pro game. And secondly, there were character issues, which have since come to pass. And Jerry Jones, who is essentially P.T. Barnum, wanted to draft him so badly, but people in the organization somehow convinced him. They're like, Jerry, you shouldn't do this. You shouldn't do this. Draft one of these great offensive linemen. And they got to Jerry, and that ends up being the biggest draft in Cowboys history because right now they've got a trio of Travis Frederick, Zach Martin, and Tyron Smith on that offensive line. They're the best offensive line in football, and that team is unstoppable because of it. And I think it masks their defensive flaws as well.
How do you view this matchup then, Gil? The Ravens at the Cowboys. This spread is set at 7. The Cowboys have the number 1 rushing offense behind that offensive line that you've just mentioned, while the Ravens have the number 1 rushing defense in the league, conceding an average of 71.3 yards per game. The Cowboys have never beaten the Ravens either. They've met 4 times before, and the Ravens have won all 4. How do you view the matchup, Gil?
Yeah, I wouldn't put too much stock into that 0-4. I mean, I don't think that is significant in that those are different ball clubs. And when you do things by yards per play, which is how I use, that's the metric that I use on these. Baltimore is, in fact, the number one rush defense, 3.3 yards per rush allowed. Dallas is number two, only behind Buffalo's mark of, I believe it's 5.3 yards per play on the ground on offense. Yes, 5.3. So it seems like it's strength versus strength. But Baltimore's defense has not played anybody, really. The two offenses that they did play, the Raiders and the Redskins, the only top offenses they faced, really did gash them. So Baltimore's statistics are somewhat, you know, somewhat strange and somewhat a mask for the fact that this team's probably not that great on defense. And they're certainly mediocre on offense. And Joe Flacco is the poster child of that mediocrity. They have some injuries on their offensive line. Alex Lewis and Marshall Yanda is uncertain for this game. And Flacco was asked about Baltimore's offense, and he, in typical Flacco fashion, said, you know, it hasn't been perfect. We've got to get better. I've got to be better at dealing with some things. And I think he fell asleep right after he said that with his narcolepsy, because he's such an excitable guy. But, you know, if I'm making the case for Dallas, let's put it this way, Dave. This is very simple. If I'm making the case for Dallas, Dallas 7-point favorite here, the case I would make is this. Dallas has a Thanksgiving Day game 4 days later. So they have a prospect of two games in 5 days. And that game happens to be against their rivals, the Washington Redskins. And they're just coming off the dramatic win against the Steelers. So you've got the Ravens wedged in between the Steelers and the Redskins. Not only is it a game that is, you know, just on that alone, potentially the game that they would look ahead from, you know, to the Redskins game, which is, you know, just on a normal week schedule. But they're really facing, and Dallas is used to doing this because they always play the Thanksgiving Day game. Dallas and Detroit always play those games. So Dallas knows how to approach this two-game in five-day span. And I think if you saw the Cowboys go up 10, 13 points late in this game, you could make the case that they would pull guys, whereas in other games they wouldn't. So if you're making the case for Baltimore plus the points, I think that's the case you make. I, however, don't buy into that. I'm not getting in front of this Cowboys train. I'll take the Cowboys and give the points.
Are the Cowboys the selection? They're -7 points with a little bit of extra juice there, 5-6 on the Cowboys minus the 7 points. The Philadelphia Eagles, actually, full transparency first of all here. I noted down the wrong game when sending Gil the list earlier on in the week, and it is actually the Rams game that's televised. That's the 9 p.m. game here in the UK. The Dolphins at the Rams, but I sent Gil the Eagles at the Seahawks. But Gil, the Eagles at the Seahawks, yes, is a much better matchup anyway to preview. So maybe it was my subconscious working there, Gil, when I sent you the Eagles at the Seahawks.
Well, happy to talk about both. But the Eagles and Seahawks, first of all. Seahawks favorite, what do you have there, by 6 at this point at Will Hill, Dave?
6.5 now, Gil, so it's moved up 6.5 now, yeah.
Well, listen, first of all, let me just cite the statistic for the Seahawks, which I find to be the most unbelievable in the NFL and perhaps in professional sports, that I've probably said on your podcast before. I say it on all the podcasts that I do, which is that the Seattle Seahawks now have led or been within one score in the fourth quarter of 97 consecutive games, including the playoffs. It is the longest streak in NFL history by far. That is unbelievable. It's 9 games this year, 4 complete seasons before that, including 10 playoff games along the way in those 4 seasons, and then 14 games in the previous season in 2011. It is unbelievable. So if you're a Seahawks fan, you have entertainment for all 4 quarters every single day, every single game they play, without exception, since early 2011. What does that mean here? Not much. I just wanted to wow you with the stat. But the point being that the Seattle Seahawks now, after that win against New England last week, touchdown outright win at New England, it is impressive to go in to New England and win. We don't have to share that. We're not breaking news with that. But I think the Seahawks found something with C.J. Procise, their running back, who had 153 total yards in that game, 66 on the ground, 87 through the air. And his play was so impressive, they cut Christian Michael, who had been there running back this year in place of Thomas Rawls. Now they're getting Thomas Rawls back. So the Seahawks decided, you know what, we're going with Rawls and ProSize. Poor Christian Michael on the street, though he was picked up by the Packers pretty quickly. But listen, this is about Carson Wentz, who, you know, if it weren't for Dak Prescott, we'd probably be talking about him at this point as having this great rookie season for the Eagles. The Eagles are 5-4. Nothing to be ashamed about for a rookie quarterback to have his team at 5-4. But he has never gone into an environment like this, Dave. I've attended a game in Seattle, which, of course, is all the way in the Pacific Northwest of the United States. The weather and the fans are a combination that is unlike anything else in this league. And Carson Wentz hasn't seen anything like this. It is going to be an impossible environment for him to play in. I like the Seahawks. I'll give the points.
The Seahawks minus 6.5 at 10-11. You've pretty much gone through everything I have written down in front of me here, Gil, about the environment. And this being a real test for Carson Wentz as well, because he will have never encountered anything like this before. How he copes with this environment, Gil, might be an indicator for his scope and his progression in the future as well, because some people making comparisons with Wentz and how Russell Wilson started his career in the National Football League, those comparisons seem to me to be a bit premature though, Gil.
I would agree with you. They're not only a bit premature, I'm not even sure they're accurate. I mean, I saw those comparisons as well, or I heard them and just sort of scoffed at those. I mean, look, Russell Wilson, the main thing that I can say about Russell Wilson, and we know in retrospect now, Russell Wilson has taken the Seahawks to one Super Bowl championship. He's taken them to another as a quarterback. Now, Russell Wilson has benefited, let's make no mistake, to have a great defense on his side as well, too. So that's been great for Russell Wilson. But Russell Wilson has played behind a terrible offensive line now for, you know, 1.5 seasons now, and he's done so most of this season hurt. And yet, he still took the Seahawks to the playoffs last year, and he's still going to take them there this year. The Seahawks are 6-2-1. You know, until Dallas unseats them, they're still the best team in the NFC. And so to compare Carson Wentz, a kid who in 9 total games has, you know, played well, and he has a good passer rating, but QBR, which is a stat that takes into account how he amasses his yards, QBR doesn't have him that good. They have him as very average, and the reason is because most of what Carson Wentz does is dink and dunk. Mm. His passes are short. His skill players take the ball from there. So, you know, let's not make that comparison. It's unfair to Carson Wentz. He's not as mobile as Russell Wilson either. Good quarterback. Not trying to take anything away from Carson Wentz. He's a kid, but yeah, he's no Russell Wilson.
On to primetime then, Gil. We've got the Green Bay Packers in action at the Washington Redskins on Sunday night, early hours of Monday morning in the UK, 1:30 start time. Green Bay Packers 5-4, the Washington Redskins 20-29 on the money line. The spread is set at 3, the Packers plus 3 at 5-6, with the Redskins minus 3 at even money. And the total points, 49.5. The under 10-11 with the over at 10-11. And your Washington Redskins, Gil, on a roll at the moment, following back-to-back losses at home against Pittsburgh and Dallas at the start of the season. The Skins are 5-1-1. And they welcome a Packers side that are struggling. They come into this matchup standing at 4-5. And this is the first time since 2008 they've had a losing record at this stage of a season. And that was also the last time they failed to make the postseason as well, the Packers. Gil, can you pinpoint a reason, first of all, why Green Bay haven't been as successful this season as to which they are accustomed in the past, Gil?
Well, I mean, the quick answer is, you know, they've been banged up on offense tremendously, right? They have not had their starting running back really all year. They had Eddie Lacy for a bit. James Starks and Lacy have been hurt simultaneously. So the Packers are this rare NFL team that have played most of the season plugging a wide receiver and converting him into a running back. And they've had this very strange dynamic this year. Randall Cobb's been out of the lineup. Jordy Nelson doesn't appear to be quite himself, or the Jordy Nelson we remember. So Aaron Rodgers has really had that story with him on offense. And on defense, you know, they have had trouble in the secondary with injuries. And so that's the quick answer to the Packers. Now, keep in mind, the Packers won a Super Bowl also when they had the most missed games due to injuries in the league one year. So, you know, it's an excuse to some people, but it's a reality. It's a reality. Okay, so that's the quick answer, I think, to why the Packers have been struggling this year. That's the easy answer anyway.
So that's the Packers, Gil. But Washington have been impressive. I know that I have this as well. When I follow a team, I'm weirdly negative about them most of the time. But Washington, you have to be impressed with the way Kirk Cousins has played, with Jordan Reed, who is an exceptional tight end, and Jamison Crowder seems to be getting better with every passing week, Gil. So they've got a deep threat, Washington, haven't they?
They do. Are you accusing me of being weirdly negative about the Redskins, Dave? Is that what I'm hearing? That's all I got. I couldn't hear anything you said after that. I was like, I think Dave's accusing me of being weirdly negative about the Redskins. For your information, young man, no, I had the Redskins last week against the Vikings. I'd like to say that I'm weirdly realistic about the Redskins, I
Yes,
think.
yeah.
And I think to sort of buttress your point about me being negative, though, I don't like them here against the Packers. I think the Redskins are about to go from 5-3-1 to 5-5-1 in a 5-day span against the Packers and against the Cowboys. The Redskins have been solid on offense. Kirk Cousins has so many weapons. There's no question about that. Jamison Crowder, who is a kid out of Duke, who has just been phenomenal for the Redskins. And you're referring to Jordan Reed. Both of those guys have 44 catches. Pierre Garçon adding 42. Peter Waiter, as we like to call him here in the States, Pierre Garçon, little French translation. But you know, it's Aaron Rodgers. Listen, I don't mean to be so simplistic, but Aaron Rodgers does not lose to the Washington Redskins. I'm sorry, it doesn't work that way. Aaron Rodgers, who statistically in conventional stats ranks at the bottom half of the league in passer rating, completion percentage, yards per attempt, having this terrible year, right? But he's doing a couple wily veteran things. He's not taking sacks. He has an unbelievable knack of having great runs in key situations. So yeah, it's listen, you can make a case for the Redskins offense, but the big thing that I will say is that, and I've said this before, hopefully on your show as well, the Redskins earlier this year with a couple opponents, it's like they performed a Jedi mind trick on them. The Redskins are really poor against the run. And these teams were gashing them. The Browns were gashing them. Detroit just abandoned the run for no reason. And it's sort of like they ceded these games to the Redskins. Philadelphia abandoned it. It's sort of like, you know, this is too easy running against you, Redskins. Let's elevate the level of difficulty of beating you. And they went away from it. I don't think the Packers are going to do that. I think the Packers are going to commit to James Starks in the running game, and they're going to run all over the Redskins. And that's going to help Aaron Rodgers more than anything. And I think the Packers win this one outright, let alone cover the spread.
So you think see things changing then, Gil, because the Packers haven't run over anyone this season.
I'm not saying I see it changing for the long term for the Packers. You know, I don't think this team's going to go to the Super Bowl, but I do still see them as a team that's going to crush the Redskins and be a playoff contender, yes.
5-4, the Green Bay Packers. Just one final word on this match before we move on to the Monday night game, Gil. We saw Marcus Mariota and the Tennessee Titans pass all over this Packers defense last week. Will Washington not just be able to do the same thing?
Yeah, I mean, look, I think they'll have some success for sure, whether they get DeSean Jackson back or not. They have this kid who filled in for Trent Williams, too. The Redskins lost their four-time Pro Bowl left tackle, Trent Williams, to a four-game PED suspension. And it's Tyon Michie is his name. And I think that he played really well in that first game last week against the Vikings. And again, I had the Redskins last week against the Vikings. But to think that he can do it now with a Packers defense that could very well get Clay Matthews back. Clay Matthews means a lot to that Packers defense. In his absence, four games without him, the Packers allowed an average of 34.5 points. I think if you get Clay Matthews back, it's amazing what that will do for their defense. So I think the Redskins will have some success, but not the same if Clay's back in there.
Monday night football then, Gil. Houston Texans at the Oakland Raiders, 1:30 a.m. start time Tuesday morning. And this is a match being played in Mexico City in the National Football League this weekend. The Texans are 23-10 on the money line, the Raiders 10-27, and the spread is set at 6. Are the Texans plus 6 at 10-11, the Raiders minus 6 at 10-11, and the total points is 46, with the under 10-11 and the over 10-11. The Raiders top of the AFC West, taking on the team at the top of the AFC South on Monday Night Football. But not many people are talking about the Texans, Gil, whereas the Raiders are seen as one of the most young and exciting teams in the NFL. What's impressed you the most about the Oakland Raiders this season, Gil?
I think what's impressed me most is, I think what's been obvious to most people, which is Derek Carr's just been great, and he's got great receivers and Amari Cooper, and Michael Crabtree. Khalil Mack, finally, the last 4 weeks, has been really stupid impressive. 18 tackles, 6 sacks, 2 forced fumbles, fumble recovery, a pass breakup. That's the guy who they rely on defense. So there's a lot to be impressed about with the Raiders, but perhaps the single most impressive thing is that they have 19 undrafted players on their roster. Mm-hmm. And those players have played. They combined to start 29 games this season. It includes undrafted guys on the offensive line like Donald Penn and Austin Howard. That, to me, is what has been the real difference maker for the Raiders. You just don't see that with other teams.
They're coming off a bye into this matchup, Gil. I just wonder whether, when we talk about bye weeks, we usually talk about them in terms of a team getting healthy and they come at the right point. I wonder whether the bye week for the Oakland Raiders has come at the wrong point and it's a momentum stopper in some ways for that franchise.
Yeah, that's an interesting way of looking at it. I mean, I think teams react differently to their bye weeks, right? If they're on a roll and they have a bye, I guess the conventional wisdom is, we don't want our bye then. If they're struggling or they have lots of injuries, you know, a bye is a perfect thing. You know, they're a young team. I'm not really sure we know if this is a good or a bad thing. I do think that the interesting thing about their bye week is that it relates to where they're playing this week. So it's almost, you know, and I think in some respects we're bearing the headline. You mentioned Estadio Azteca, which is where they're playing this in Mexico City. The NFL's overwhelming, Roger Goodell's just never-ending desire, Dave, to make the NFL a global game. London, take our games. Now Mexico City, take this game. The difference is that Mexico City, for those who don't know, is 2,000 feet higher than our highest stadium location in Denver. In Mile High, it actually is 7,349 feet above sea level. I haven't done the conversion to the metric system, but that is high. And so it's interesting how these teams are adapting to the environment. Usually when you go play in Denver, some teams get there early, or that's how people decide to fight such conditions. The Raiders are taking a different approach here. The Raiders, according to the San Francisco Chronicle, are arriving in Mexico City on the day of the game, as late as possible to avoid fatigue. So their coach, Jack Del Rio, who coached in Denver for 3 seasons between 2012 and 2014, he believes that's the best method to deal with the difference in elevation. And I quoted someone on my show, an instructor of exercise and sports science at Western State Colorado University. Her name is Sarah Baisden. And she described what it's like to perform in those conditions at Estadio Azteca by saying it feels as if your rib cage or diaphragm won't expand, and it feels like you can't catch your breath. Trying to catch your breath between bursts of speed, you definitely won't be able to feel like you're recovering. It's like breathing with a plastic bag on your head. So the Raiders, who have had 2 weeks off, are taking that entire 2 weeks off and then flying to Mexico City that day.
Wow.
So strange by week, you know, 14 days of nothing, not even travel, just practicing. And they've been practicing, by the way, with oxygen masks on their practice facility, in their practice facility in California. So it's really interesting. I mean, that really is one aspect of the game. I mentioned this on my show yesterday on the Beating the Book podcast. And then my guest, Warren Sharp, said, well, you're actually not even telling half the story, which is the NFL has had to warn players from both teams to watch themselves out. Don't go out. Be aware of your environment. Apparently sort of suggesting, you know, there's a possibility of muggings and that sort of thing. Also, watch what you eat. I don't know what the real point of this game is for these teams in Mexico City, but maybe Oakland's strategy of getting there as late as possible is the way to go here.
Does that make it very difficult from a betting perspective then, Gil?
You know, I think it's an element you have to pay attention to. Like, do you believe in that Oakland strategy? I kind of do.
Just as you were about to say, Gil, I think because Jack Del Rio's there and he's spent so many seasons in Mile High, he's got the advantage.
I would agree with you. So for me, that gives Oakland a bit of an advantage. Plus, you know, just from a football perspective, even if this was actually played in Oakland, I would tell you the same thing that I told you last week or weeks before about the Texans, which is that, you know, they only got their first road win of the season last week at Jacksonville. And in doing so, Brock Osweiler threw for 99 yards total, 3.7 yards per attempt. I mean, you talk about dinking and dunking. Osweiler cannot get the ball downfield. And Houston has the worst offense in the NFL, yards per play, 4.7. Yards per pass, which we just talked about, 5.2. Both dead last in the NFL. And I mentioned the Football Outsiders site, which is an advanced football site here run by my friend Aaron Schatz. And he has a special proprietary stat. And last week, before Houston beat Jacksonville, he said that no team with a winning record at midseason has ever rated lower for his proprietary stat than the 2016 Texans, who came in at 5-3, and now they're 6-3. So his opinion from an advanced metric standpoint is that this Houston team is far worse than their 6-3 record suggests. So I, for all those reasons, love the Oakland Raiders here.
And that's on Osweiler as well, isn't it? Not being able to get the ball downfield because he has one of the elite receivers in the NFL in DeAndre Hopkins, so he should be able to find Hopkins.
Yeah, it's a great point. And he has a speedster on the other side who has been banged up lately, but for much of the season was available to Osweiler as well and Will Fuller. So it's not like he doesn't have weapons.
Very good. Those are the four games done, Gil. So it's time for your pick six, your six best bets of the week here with William Hill.
Are you telling me that you deprived me of talking about the Dolphins-Rams game? Is that what you're telling me?
Well, we're going to have to because if you're listening for the first time, Gil, basically, we do the podcast, and then at the end of the podcast, Gil does his 40-second picks for each game, and that's when, Gil, I will unleash you on the Dolphins at the Rams, so you'll still have the opportunity. Don't panic.
Okay, I was so panicking.
The pick six for this week, Gil.
The pick six for this week, let us start with an early game, and let's start with Arizona at Minnesota. If not the marquee matchup of this weekend, this is certainly the more fascinating or the most fascinating game of this weekend because you have two teams that really have been below expectations. Arizona preseason expectations, and in the case of Minnesota, they were 5-0, now they're 5-4. But you have two great defenses. You just don't have two great offenses, offenses that have struggled. But the Minnesota offensive line is the weak link here. I like the Arizona Cardinals getting the points at Minnesota. I think they get it done on offense, and the Vikings do not. Pick number two in the NFL. Also early, go back to that Dallas game. Dallas is the pick, giving 7 at Baltimore. I think you can make a case for the scheduling problem with the Cowboys here because they have a Thanksgiving Day game 4 days later, but the Ravens are not good on offense, and I think that their defensive stats are inflated from playing a bad schedule. I think the Cowboys just run all over them and have another typical Cowboys win behind that great offensive line. Cowboys are pick number two, giving 7, hosting Baltimore. Pick number three, also an early game, Buffalo at Cincinnati, going off the grid here. I'm taking Buffalo as a slight dog against the Bengals. Buffalo's ground game is the only game in the NFL that's better than the Cowboys in terms of yards per rush. The Bills get 5.3 yards per rush. It's the best mark in the NFL, and I don't think Cincinnati can beat anybody that's that good on the ground at this point. Could be a lot of weather situation in this game. It could be high winds, and if there are high winds, you got to like Buffalo's ground game even more. Buffalo is the pick as a dog at Cincinnati. Pick number four. We go to the primetime game, or no, not yet the primetime game. Let's go to that Philadelphia-Seattle game. Seattle is pick number four, giving 6.5, hosting the Philadelphia Eagles. For all the reasons stated before, I just think the Seahawks will assert themselves in what is a horrific environment for a rookie quarterback like Carson Wentz. Pick number five, primetime game. We discussed it. I'm taking Aaron Rodgers and the Packers, getting 2.5 points at Washington. I think the Packers run all over a Redskins run defense that has not been exploited properly by previous Redskin opponents. Aaron Rodgers ain't losing to the Redskins. The Packers are the pick getting 2.5 at Washington. Pick number 6, Houston is going to lose to the Raiders. We're taking the Raiders as the 6th pick at Mexico City. The Raiders giving the 5.5 or 6 points that you see it at right now. I think it's 6. Oakland is the pick. Great travel strategy. The Raiders are pick number 6.
Superb. Superb, Gil. Always a pleasure to speak to you on this podcast. Make sure you check out all Gil's podcasts stateside. They are available at Beating the Book. The Megapod is out now. Who's the guest on the Megapod this week, Gil?
Great guest this week, Warren Sharp from Sharp Football Analysis. Warren also puts out this great preview guide in the NFL each and every season. He provides awesome insight. Would really check that out if you want to bet pro football.
Make sure you check out that podcast. And thank you, everyone, for listening to this podcast. You can follow Gil at Beating the Book on Twitter. You can follow myself at D. Kellner. Check out all the NFL odds at williamhill.com and click on the American football page. And check out all our on-demand audio at audioboom.com by typing in William Hill. If you're having a bet on the NFL this week, very best of luck.
Get a £5 free bet every week with Offer Club from William Hill. Simply stake a total of £20 or more across the week on pre-match football accumulators with 4 or more selections, and you'll get a £5 free bet on the Friday. Plus, you can get on faster and easier than ever with our new and improved mobile betting experience. Join William Hill Offer Club on mobile or online now. When the fun stops, stop.